I'm going to try to go through some of my slides quickly because some of the information you have heard, but I wanted to try to pull it all together. The primary focus of my discussion is looking at IPP infrastructure measures of effectiveness, which I'll talk about in a little bit, were implemented by CDC in 2007. And I'm sorry, I didn't introduce myself. I'm Kelly Opdyke, as Bobby said. I'm the Region 2 Infertility Prevention Project Deputy Coordinator and Data Analyst based out of Chincoteague Associates in New York. Briefly, the National IPP and Region 2. The goal is the reduction of STD-related infertility through targeted screening and treatment of women for chlamydia trachomatis. So we want to target effectively, efficiently. The project is funded through a memorandum of agreement, between CDC and the Office of Population Affairs, which oversees the Title X Family Planning Program. And the majority of screening through this program takes place in family planning and STD clinics. As David mentioned, the program is administered through the 10 Health and Human Service regions and Indian Health Service. Region 2, the data that I'll be presenting, comes from New Jersey, New York City, New York State, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. And the focus of the IPP funding is really to ensure screening for uninsured women under the age of 25. We've heard these stats very often, but chlamydia is the most commonly reported bacterial STD, more than 1 million cases reported in 2006, out of an estimated 2.8 million cases due to both underreporting and underdetection. The majority of infection occurs in younger women, which we look at as 15 to 24 years, with a median positivity of 6.7% in 2006. And of note, the prevalence has remained largely flat among this target population since 2001. So further targeting our screening efforts so that we can try to see an impact in prevalence is one of the goals. Looking at chlamydia positivity among female family planning users in Region 2, and this is coming from our Infertility Prevention Project prevalence monitoring data set, we see a split here between two age groups. The blue line represents females ages 15 to 25, and I included the 25-year-olds because they're in CDC criteria, although the data are often cut off at 24, as David noted that inconsistency. But the pink line represents women over age 25, and you can see that very consistently, although the trend has fluctuated somewhat, very consistently the older women have a lower positivity. And I adjusted it for test types since MAT testing has become more prevalent. Although of note, in Region 2, we still have a low penetration of MATs in our family planning sites. It's only 60% overall. And that is something that we're working on, but it is complicated by a number of factors. Looking at chlamydia testing and positivity among female family planning users ages 15 to 44 years, this is the same data set. Again, it's family planning users. You see a nice sort of left skewed normal distribution curve with the bars, and that represents the number of tests conducted. I'm going to talk about that again as it relates. It looks very similar to the patient age distribution, so the testing distribution and the patient age distribution are very similar. The blue line represents positivity, and you can see very clearly that the positivity is highest among the younger clients and drops off. The orange line represents the 3% positivity cutoff that we talked about as a threshold, as one threshold that's held up as the cost-effectiveness cutoff for positivity, and that intersects at 3% with the 25-year-old age group. Although, as in with other projects, we do continue to see somewhat higher positivity up to age 30, and then it continues to drop off. The CDC guidelines, we've talked about these already. This is the exact language from the STD treatment guidelines published in 2006. CDC recommends screening all sexually active women age 25 years and younger annually, and screening of older women with risk factors. For example, those with, who have a new sex partner or multiple sex partners. And this, as Holly had mentioned, is not time limited based on the criteria that are given. And it provides examples of risk factors, but suggests that these are not the only risk factors that may be of interest. So when thinking about the IPP program, there are a few key questions that I wanted to just lay out, which were kind of background to the measures of effectiveness. First of all, are providers appropriately targeting the use of chlamydia tests according to national screening guidelines? Also, what is the screening coverage among the target population of females under age 26? Furthermore, how can screening be maximized, screening coverage be maximized among the most at-risk populations? And given the overall low positivity that we frequency among females over 25? How can we better identify those who are at risk for infection? So there were two measures of effectiveness which were put forth again by CDC in 2007. These data are collected at the infrastructure level, so the regional level, through the IPP project. One looks at chlamydia test utilization, which is defined as the proportion of chlamydia tests conducted on females stratified by age group. And this question uses infertility prevention project prevalence monitoring data to inform the measure. The second looks at chlamydia screening coverage in family planning clinics, defined as the proportion of female family planning users screened for chlamydia, and I should say at least once during the year, by age group. And this uses the family planning annual report, or FPAR data, tables 1 and 11 that David talked about. So why were these data sources selected, and what are the advantages and disadvantages? Well, first of all, both data sets are readily available nationally and standardized. So everybody's collecting data in the same fashion. This is a huge advantage for trying to conduct some kind of a national assessment or regional assessment. They're also stratified by age and gender. While the FPAR provides an unduplicated count of clients seen and clients tested, IPP generally does not, although at the project area level, this analysis can be done. Family planning annual report includes data from non-IPP sites. The IPP data only includes sites that have been selected to participate, sentinel surveillance sites, and includes about half of the Title X family planning clinics overall and in Region 2. Neither provides information on the visit type. And again, this information may be available at the local level, but it's not reported to IPP or FPAR, at least not in Region 2. And neither provides information about risk factors or signs and symptoms related to chlamydia testing or screening. IPP, I said maybe. At the national level, these criteria have not, the risk factors and clinical risk factors have not been defined. We do have criteria in Region 2, but it's not consistently collected, and it's not standardized, and therefore not really reliable or used much. So looking at the data, we looked at both calendar year 2005 and calendar year 2006. These were the age groups that were defined for test utilization, and again, this is the IPP prevalence monitoring data. We see that both in 2005 and 2006, I'm just going to jump ahead to the next slide. In 2005 and 2006, you look at the 25 to 29 and over 29 age groups, and you add that up. It's about 40% of all of the tests were conducted outside of age groups. So the majority of tests, about 60%, were for women within the age criteria, but a large percentage, 40%, were outside. This is looking at positivity by age group, by the defined age groups we're looking at. And I can highlight a very similar slide. We still see that with a low positivity, particularly in the over 29s, there is much more testing going on than what we would like. So this is what I just said. The data limitations, however, we really can't distinguish screening from diagnostic testing for clients outside of age criteria because we're not looking at risk factor data. We're not looking at clinical signs and symptoms. And furthermore, there's somewhat of a lack of consensus on what the clinical signs and symptoms predicted for chlamydia should be. And there are also no unique client identifiers available to help us parse out who were repeat testers. Now looking at the next measure, chlamydia screening coverage and family planning based on the FPAR data. The thing I wanted to point out here on, let's see if I can do this with a mouse. Oh, yes, in this column, estimated screening coverage. Now, these percentages by age group, although they're statistically significantly different, it's just because we have such a large sample size, they're not practically different. 45% coverage among 15 to 19-year-olds and almost 40% coverage among the over 24-year-olds. This is much higher than what we'd expect if people were following age-based screening criteria. And if we look at this data in a slightly different way, if we look at the ratio of the number of tests to the number of users, we see that basically people are being screened at a rate that's that reflects the distribution of the population by age, not indicating any particular targeting of age-based testing. These ratios, if the 25% of females tested were age 15 to 19, well, 25% of the users were age 15 to 19. So it's slightly lower for the over 24, suggesting that women are slightly less likely to be tested, but it's much too similar for what we'd like to see. So again, little if any age-based targeting of chlamydia testing is taking place in Region 2 at least, and test utilization by in family planning by age closely resembles the age distribution of users, And furthermore, more than 50% of females under 25 weren't screened. The data limitations here are the same again, though we can't distinguish screening from diagnostic testing for the older women. So the bottom line, if we look at these two measures, what the data tell us. There's both a deficiency in chlamydia screening coverage among the target population of young women, and an apparently excessive amount of screening taking place among women over age 25. Just sort of a digression, but I think still relevant. We talked a lot today about regional screening criteria, and there's actually a poster downstairs, I think it's P34, where we describe a study that we did looking at adherence to our regional screening criteria in relation to screening coverage. Our Region 2 IPP minimum screening criteria for Title 10, which were established, I believe, in 1998, and have not been revised in a very long time, indicate that all women under the age of 25, years of age, attending a family planning clinic for an initial or annual visit will be screened for chlamydia. It doesn't talk about older women in our criteria. And it is contingent on a pelvic exam, which is something that is no longer necessary to conduct the test with the availability of alternative specimen types. Well, we found that an estimated 86% of clients were screened as per regional criteria, that is, those having a pelvic exam within the age group. And this was based on data from a random sample of client records from 164 family planning sites. But when we look at the FPAR data that I just showed you, the screening coverage among the target population is only 47%. So really, although we have high adherence to our regional screening criteria, it is inadequate and it translates into low screening coverage. And this is something that we've been talking a lot about, stepping back from regional criteria, focusing more on are we really meeting the national guidelines. So looking at, back to those program questions, how do we maximize screening coverage among our target population? And one question is, could resources used to screen women over 25 who are not at risk facilitate expanded screening of younger women? Well, first of all, we have to identify who's not at risk, who's over 25, which is something that Holly and Bobby's programs have looked at. And furthermore, we need to think about, well, whose resources? On the one hand, we have IPP program resources, which for the most part are not paying for tests for the older women. On the other hand, is it an efficient use of Medicaid resources to be targeting testing to women who are not at risk? Furthermore, family planning and STD clinics now offer many streamlined services, particularly to young women, that don't require pelvic exams, such as pregnancy testing, emergency contraception, HIV testing. And it's important to think about missed opportunities for providing screening to potentially at-risk clients. Urine-based screening is one of the ways we can do this. There's also self-collected vaginal swabs and other specimen types that need strong consideration. And leading into a discussion, I think we're not going to have too much time for questions unless you guys want to miss some of your lunch. In Region 2, we're looking at the feasibility of replicating the California over 20 study to evaluate the prevalence of chlamydia and risk factors predictive of infection in over 25. And I think other projects could do something similar. The question is, what do you do with that information? Are we going to have every state, city, jurisdiction have their own criteria, or can we derive from this some kind of a more universal set of risk factors that are predictive of infection? Secondly, is the 3% cutoff for cost effectiveness something that we should adhere to, or are there other thresholds that should be considered? An important question, could the national screening guidelines for females over age 25 be clarified, provided expanded, made more measurable, time limited? Is this something that all the regions and states and everybody could agree on? Does that make sense? And along with that, our ability to collect data about whether or not screening criteria are being followed depends on having very clearly specified criteria. And as David talked about, there's a lot of discrepancies now about how this data is being collected, if it's being collected, when it's being collected. So these, I think, defining screening guidelines and improving data collection around those guidelines are two very important next steps. And this is my contact information, which will be available on the PowerPoint slides. But now, if any of you have any questions, I'm happy to answer or to open it up to some of the other speakers. Thank you. I have one question way in the back. the question was, where does the 3% cutoff come from? And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's from a Jeannie Marazzo study from, I don't know what year, 1998, a Jeannie Marazzo study. And I think the consensus was that there haven't been a lot of other studies that have challenged that, replicated that. That's really the one study that people look to for that number. So if I understood it, your question, how many clients are being tested for gonorrhea and not chlamydia? And also with the combined test, is this something a cost-effective approach to? And I'm not sure if you're saying to increase gonorrhea screening or increase chlamydia screening. My understanding is that it's much more common to test for chlamydia only than it is to test for gonorrhea only, unless there are symptoms present. And in our region, the vast majority of screening for gonorrhea is done as part of a dual test for chlamydia. But that's a good question. And there is also gonorrhea prevalence monitoring data that's collected through IPP. We actually are revising our data collection right now so that it's more specific about the gonorrhea test type and be better able to answer that type of question. But right now it's only about 5% of all of our records that have a gonorrhea result only. Thank you. Thanks, everybody.